Judiciary Committee, June 1st, 1977, 7 p.m. through 3:50, page 66, side 2.
Meeting to come to order. Senator Lopez is present. Representatives Richard, Limonar, and Kulongowski are excused. Take Senate Bill 3. Defense.
City of Portland, the Portland Police Department, and we generated this particular bill in the interim. We're very much in support of it. We feel that there is quite a major problem in this country right now with juvenile crime, and with the law enforcement people being charged with handling juvenile arrests and crime investigations the same as adult arrests and investigations. We feel that we need the ability to fingerprint and photograph arrested youth arrested on serious crimes, much as we do adults, so we can try to hold down some of the serious crime, mainly burglaries and auto theft, is where the fingerprints are the most valuable, and photographs and robbery cases such as purse snatches. At the present time, you're aware that we have a law that permits us to photograph and fingerprint only upon order of the juvenile court, which we find often time-consuming. And to get this order, has to be backed up with an affidavit of probable cause containing a lot of information. Much like getting a search warrant, we find that there is much recidivism in the serious juvenile crime, at least in Portland, and from my conversation with other law enforcement juvenile officers throughout the state, this is pretty true everywhere. And we feel that having the ability to photograph and fingerprint upon arrest for serious crime, we can then identify some of the offenders that have been involved in other serious crimes and will be involved in other serious crimes in the future. I have some statistics I'll be glad to hand out to the committee that come from our own office and the amount of juveniles that we deal with. In this case, in 1976, we handled 767 youths that were arrested for felony charges. This is a number of young people that does not reflect the number of crimes, which is actually quite higher because a number of the young people were arrested on multiple charges, especially in the area of burglary. And it was interesting to note that out of the 767, 505 of these individuals, which figures out to 66%, had prior felony arrest records at the Portland Police Bureau. And out of that 505, they committed 1,316 prior felonies, which figures out 2.6 per kid. And what we're talking about here is not what some people tend to visualize juvenile crime as being: minor vandalism, minor shoplifting, shooting BB holes in the neighbor's window type of thing. We're talking about residential burglaries, armed robberies, auto theft cases. I've personally seen quite an increase in the last 6 months in juvenile girls being involved in fraud cases, stolen and forged credit cards and checks. This is a real problem. We're not talking about the traditional, quote, kid stuff, unquote. We're talking about sophisticated, serious crime. This is why we support this this bill. We think that it will be a help to all law enforcement to deal with this problem. I would be glad to answer any questions the committee might have of the position of the police bureau.
Can you vote?
Do you have any statistics with respect to age
groupings that are committing?
All of the figures I gave you here, sir, were under 18 years old.
But would you be able to say how many were committed by those age 12, 13, 14, so on?
No, I can't. I haven't broken it down to that. I could. It would take some time, although unfortunately we're seeing an increasing number of young people come through our office that are 12, 13, and 14 years old involved in the serious crime. And unfortunately, we find that often these young people do have contacts in the adult criminal system as far as fencing their stolen property and this type of thing.
What kind of crime typically is a 12 or 13 year old involved in?
House burglary mainly. And where a few years ago we used to see young people that age break into houses and steal the piggy banks and the money they could find laying around and maybe small items such as pocket knives and this sort of thing. We see them now taking television sets, stereos, cameras, firearms, because there are outlets for these, and a lot of these kids know where the outlets are.
I'm a little unclear about the situation in which subsection B of 1 would apply. Upon consent of both the child and his parent, after advice that they are not required to give such consent. Situations with that, in light of the other situations in which the prerogative fingerprint and photograph would be available under the bill, what situations is that intended to deal with?
I suppose I could best explain that by a personal experience that happened last summer with me in a case I was investigating where there was an apartment complex and their tenant had been burglarized, and there was another tenant that was fingering, as you were pointing the finger to a young lad that lived in the apartment complex.
It was an exculpatory tenant.
Right. I ultimately went to him and his mother. He claimed innocence. There was no reason to believe that he was involved, except we had somebody that was just convinced that he was. We did have latent prints in that case. We printed them, compared the prints. They did not match up. We were able to clear this person and go back to the witness and say, well, there was a mistake here, and everybody was satisfied, and then we were able to focus in on another direction in the investigation.
And the requirement of child and his parent, I take it that that's intended to mean if there are two parents, either parent with one of
yes.
the two would be sufficient.
Yes, this is the intent of the statement.
Another question I have in subsection 4, which defines the susceptibility of the files and records to inspection, defines that in a way that's conditioned upon the passage of Senate Bill 2. Now, if Senate Bill 2 is not passed, where do we stand with respect to the accessibility for inspection of such records? If this bill passes, but Senate Bill 2 doesn't, where do we stand with respect to accessibility?
I am afraid that I can't really intelligently answer that. I do not know. Possibly Ms. Welch could talk about that in a moment. I know that under our present system, at least with our department, the only people that see the files that we now have that we've obtained under court order are those strictly in law enforcement. I am not really that familiar with the laws surrounding security and privacy, but I know what the practice is that I and other members of my organization work under.
I'll pose the question. Mr. Wambo?
I'm curious, what are the circumstances that apply or that follow under subsection 6?
This was suggested, and we agreed with it. This would be for the youth that is arrested for a felony crime and subsequently fingerprinted and photographed and then ultimately found to be not guilty of any wrongdoing, then these items of record would be done away with.
And we should apply to the not guilty situation?
Yes, this would be a situation where due to whatever circumstances the juvenile court ultimately finds that the young person is just not involved, whether it be a mistaken identity, maybe a technicality, but found to be not guilty of whatever the charge was.
The reason I ask is because the language is framed in terms of found not to be within the jurisdiction.
There is a proposed a change to that language that Ms. Welch will talk about.
We'll
clean that up a little bit.
Okay.
Further questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Trustee Welch.
My name is Betsy Welch. I'm director of the Office of Justice Program for the City of Portland, and I think I should also mention that I was with the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office for about 4 years and the senior deputy in the juvenile section of the office. I think maybe I should address myself first to some of the recent questions that were reserved for me and maybe get to some other points later. We did submit four simple amendments to the bill. The first one is really a housekeeping change. The first phrase in the language of the proposed section is taken from the existing law, and in light of the content of the specifics, it would appear to be redundant to speak of a child taken into custody, since in each instance A through D, the child is either in custody or there is some provision made. So we're just asking that language be deleted. I don't believe it has any effect other than perhaps to prevent some confusion about, for instance, whether the child needs to be in custody in order for the search warrant to be effective or something along those lines. The second proposed change is a little bit more substantial than that, relates to subsection C of section 1, which now basically the effect of the language in that subsection as it stands now would be that if a kid is arrested for a felony, you can only print him or photograph him if you need that for the case in which he was arrested, rather than you have a good, solid burglary charge on a kid and you've got an MO kind of situation where, or a course of conduct, and you feel that you've got a kid who probably can clear up some other crime. That is really the basis upon which we ask for the legislation, to give the police that kind of a tool where you have a threshold factor of a felony, a good, substantial, probable cause felony arrest. It would seem that, despite the fact that our proposal was rather well received in the Senate committee, that we're not really sure where we stand under the language as it is here. My personal opinion, based on my experience, would be that we might be better off staying with the present law if the word that remains there. Because the fact of the matter is, unless you've got a good solid case, you're not going to make an arrest. And it's rare, in my experience in the juvenile court, that the print order or the photograph order was needed for the case in point, but rather for a broader investigation.
Now, is that description, which I agree with you, is inconsistent with my understanding of what the whole thrust of this bill originally was that restriction deliberated in the Senate, or is it kind of almost inadvertent?
I think it was conscious, yes.
Was it broader to begin with and then narrowed by amendment? So when your amendment takes us back to a position from which the Senate earlier moved.
That's right, from the original proposal.
Okay. Go ahead with your amendment.
The next item is also, as I understand, an intentional deletion on the part of the Senate Judiciary Committee of a final provision that recently said that the judge could order a child to be photographed and fingerprinted. And it would seem that to have some kind of residual authority in the court to say in the appropriate case that the court may do such a thing would be just almost automatic. The implication, because the existing law does provide for that, is somehow that by silence you are actually saying that the court loses the authority to order a fingerprinting and photographing. If it were silent before and silent now, I don't think I'd be as worried about it. It's the fact that the existing law hinges completely upon the authority of a judge to decide whether it's a proper case.
That is the section that's being repealed, isn't it? 419585.
Yes. There's some of the language, for instance, A under 1 is existing law, too. It says exactly that language pursuant to a search warrant.
Well, I mean, it's the present law with respect to the requirement of the consent of the juvenile court is in 419585,
right,
which is the repeal.
The final item is along the line of the earlier question. If you can follow all the directions in that language, the problem with that language as it is now is that in light of the fact that still something like 90% of the kids who are referred to the juvenile court are handled informally, in other words, they don't go to a court hearing on the charge, even in burglary cases, although I'm not sure it's 90% in burglary cases, that a logical reading of that language would be that if there is no formal adjudication of guilt, that the prints have to be destroyed after 60 days. I don't think that that was the intent of the Senate at all. I think this is a drafting problem. And all we're really asking is that you move the not over a couple of words and clarify by, so it would now read, fingerprints and photograph files of a child who is adjudicated and found not to be within the jurisdiction. And that would be consistent with the intent of the Senate committee to deal with what the detective referred to, which is an actual formal adjudication that exonerates or in any event doesn't find the juvenile responsible for the charge to act.
What happens, I'm sure you just answered this, but what happens to a child who's not taken through to a formal adjudication? What happens to the prints of that child?
Well,
they picked up under 5 with respect to, no, that's a
point. Well, they would in a sense, that is the answer, that if a child is arrested on a burglary and printed and he's never taken to court for anything that he was arrested on or for anything that flows from it but was handled informally, then at the point when he would be eligible to have his record expunged, his fingerprint or photograph would then be subject to being expunged. But
well,
short
what
of
that period
that,
of time?
2 years.
I guess I still don't think it really says it clearly, if I understand what it's intended to mean, and that is that if the child either isn't processed, if the charges are dropped, or if he's found not guilty, then it seems to me that's what we ought to say. I'm a little confused by using the language here, within the jurisdiction of the juvenile court, because that imparts to me a separate finding of jurisdiction, wholly unrelated to guilt or innocence.
The problem is
that's the terminology of the.
We are beset with a series of rules about euphemisms. We don't use the word arrest. We don't use the word guilty, and there are several others. And this is sort of terms of art, if you will. that are familiar to people in this biz, business. But I just
one of those who served on the interim committee on
this. before this month is over, you're going to know.
I may not laugh.
Tell us what you think it means.
What is the situation with respect to the of a child who is transferred to adult court and then acquitted or diverted, if I may use that term in that context, not seized against the trial? Where does he or she fit into this story?
Well, that has not been addressed before in my, that I know of, and I could only say that my guess would be that once the actual transfer occurs, the prince is treated like the prince of an adult. There was
now,
another question raised about
the current... Now I want you to pick up the question of four.
Yeah, the current status of the law, silence of the law on the subject of police handling of juvenile records is that there are no rules. There aren't now. The Portland Police Bureau has some administrative practices and understandings, but the fact of the matter is that the law is silent, and that those of us who are concerned about the confidentiality of juvenile records are very concerned about the fact that without violating anybody's rights in a legal sense, but violating the spirit of the juvenile code, police agencies are free to disseminate juvenile information under the same circumstances that they might or could disseminate information in regard to adults.
Can we, assuming we were to want to meet that problem as a committee, in the unlikely event Senate Bill 2 does not pass the legislature, how can we best do it?
Yeah.
But it's working.
There is an irony.
And it's brown.
How would we best address that? Is it by including them as records within the meaning of a citation here, 419.567?
Well, it would seem to me probably the best way, because the language in Senate Bill 2 on the subject is, I think, is very good and fairly to the point. Just to borrow the language and repeat it in the bill.
Yeah, I'm wondering why should we have to refer to Senate Bill 2 at all? Why can't we just insert the provisions that will stand or fall on their own?
I certainly don't see
any
problem.
Do you have any further
Well, I think I would want to make another comment in connection with Senate Bill 2. For those people who have had, this is the third time we've come to the legislature with this bill, the third session. And I think one of the things that's important for those people who might be a little, have some reservations about this kind of change in the law, that as Senate Bill 2 was passed in the Senate, the provisions regarding the confidentiality of juvenile records in the hands of the police have finally been resolved so that it is consistent with the juvenile code in regard to the records within the court system itself. I think that's a very important thing when you take it together with the ability of a child who has straighten the situation out to get his record expunged. That this is basically becomes giving the police the most scientific investigative tool they have, and saying use it to identify the true nature of a kid's situation, and then if the kid does straighten himself out and sort of in the fundamental philosophy of the juvenile system, then it will all be erased from the system. Without those kind of protections, I think that this change would be considerably less palatable to a lot of people than it is with those things sort of hemming it in and saying, you know, we're not sending all it to the FBI, and that's dealt with in three, but it's going to be controlled and used for what it's intended to be.
Further questions? Thank you. Allison Smith? You're going to be sorry I missed you from vacation before I got
this made his pink hide burn and stain under the sun.
Yeah.
I'm here at his request. My name is Allison Smith of the Record, Department of Justice, Assistant Attorney General. Mr. Gillette went over Senate Bill 3 with me a week ago, 8 days ago, 2 days prior to his leaving for Sunny South.
Please.
Don't we have subpoena powers?
I offered to go to the state of him, and he was bringing the letter code back, and he turned me down. We had several concerns with the bill as it appears in the C and Gross version. They've all been answered by the proposed amendments with one exception, and that is the fact that this does not provide for photographing abused children or battered children.
Well, that's a separate bill.
It is. I realize that. It was originally included in this bill, and it's been taken out. It was in the original printed version of it. Now, I'm not sure of the number of that other bill, but if it shouldn't pass, this bill, either in the C and Gross version or even with the amendments, does not take care of that problem in most, not most, in many counties. The problem is, well, for instance, in Multnomah County, there's a standing order of the court to photograph battered children. Some counties do not have judges that have seen fit to do that, including Lake County. And Lake County, incidentally, is one that is without a judge for 1 or 2 weeks at a time, very frequently. So it would be impossible to get those pictures if they were needed.
Mr. Smith, I believe that bill, which related to battered children, I thought that was the Senate bill, which we amended to delete the reference to fingerprinting.
Correct.
Confined to photographing. And this was months, literally months ago. I wonder what happened to the bill. Wasn't it concurred in and sent to the governor?
Passed the House a long time ago.
I don't know. It's entirely possible it would have been completely taken care of.
But notified the Senate didn't concur on our amendments. Well, I just assumed it was passed and decided a law by now by the governor.
Okay, well,
anyway,
Gillette was not aware of that, and I was not either. Mrs. Welch told me of it this evening, but we're both ignorant of it.
Senate Bill 142 has been signed by the governor.
And that would take care of it.
They concurred on our amendments.
The only other comment we would have is that subsection 6, if not amended, would have the effect of getting rid of evidence in a case if for some reason there was a court delay beyond 60 days. And that could happen very easily, particularly when they have a crowded docket, the child's probably not in custody awaiting adjudication. And if he was not in court within 60 days, the subsection 6, as it's written now, would require that the prints that may be evidence in the case when they got to court would be destroyed.
Well, yeah, unless you were beyond that 60 days as a result of a continuance. But you're suggesting there are situations in which the...
Yes,
the trial setting for a hearing could be more than 60 days.
That's right. This would take care of it if it was a continuance at the request of the child or his attorney, but not if it was, suppose it was a victim that was in the hospital.
Dennis?
I haven't had enough time to think about this, but you changed the language around so that the language now reads the case has to be disposed of. And so why even bother with 60 days? Why don't you say after the case has been disposed of, the child has been found, adjudicated and found not to be within, then after that, destroy the record?
I didn't make myself clear. If the amendment that Mrs. Welch proposed, if the subsection 6 was adopted, that would take care of this problem I'm talking about.
It would take care of it, but yeah. Even so, why have any reference at all to the 60 days? I ask that to the committee.
Yep, yeah, okay. Do you have any comment on that? 60 days? That wasn't in the original bill.
But, you know, this points something up that causes me to question that Ms. Wells is intentional on it. Because this business of 60 days is consistent with the approach of destroying the records for kids that aren't processed. This is similar to Senate Bill 2, some of the language in there. The idea that if the criminal justice system doesn't act on the kids within a certain time, then that kid is out. And that's under the language of the bill as we have it before us. That whole 60-day thing fits together and makes me question whether it's accurate to say that the intent of the Senate was something other than the language of the Senate. Because the 60-day reference reinforces the idea that the language of subsection 6 is deliberately chosen rather than inadvertently.
Does Senate Bill 2 require some disposition of a, let's take case in which a petition is actually filed. Is there any time limit on the disposition of that petition?
Yes. I don't recall what it is.
I remember parts, I can't really tell you the section, but I remember parts of the Senate Bill 2 that did say, in general terms I'm speaking of, if the court doesn't act within a certain time, then it's over with. I could find it perhaps, but I can't remember off the top of my head. It's the language we worked on in Bend, at the meeting in Bend on that Sunday afternoon, whatever it was. I can't remember the article. Maybe appeals or something. But I know that concept is in there. Because, just as Ms. Welch says, there are a great many children who are brought into the system and then informally disposed of and just pending all the way.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I'm the president of the...
Come back to the microphone so we can...
I was present when they talked about this particular section over in the Senate committee, and as I recall, they talked about 30 days or 60 days or 90 days or whatever might be an appropriate length of time that they felt they wanted to write in, and if within that period of time there was a finding of not guilty, then these records would be destroyed. I don't think it was for the intent of on trying to speed up the process, because they talked about several different time frames there and then kind of settled on 60 days, figuring if that sounded reasonable.
I'm trying to get my, I want to be sure I clearly understand what the provision says, though. Does it mean that if you have not fingerprint photograph file that a child who is adjudicated or found not to be within the jurisdiction or act which blah 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 within 60 days from the date on which syntactically the section doesn't make a lot of sense.
But if you read it the other way, if we don't change it, then it doesn't. It makes two different things.
Okay.
And it leads to the implication that the Senate deliberately chose this language.
I'm not absolutely certain about everything in Senate Bill 2, but our recollection is that the only time limit is in regard to children who are in custody. Similar to the criminal court requirement that adults in custody come to trial within a certain period of time.
I believe that there's, in the appeals article, there's something that says
An order of the court, if it's been carried for more than 6 days, may be an appealable order because it's one of those out in need of order, of which there are many.
But an informal supervision of a juvenile who's been arrested on a burglary is not an order of the court. And one thing that I am sure about Senate 2 is that it did not forbid informal handling of juveniles. I think that this final section is very important, but I also feel quite certain what the Senate's intent was on that. I wouldn't have said that. I mean, they wanted to deal with the kid who was found not guilty. Yeah, you can, of course, check and, you know, check in.
But the 60 days, is it crucial or
what?
If they're giving the police agency some time to do it, I really don't know. But they did sort of, it appeared to be somewhat arbitrary choice.
Well, what I'm saying, suppose adjudication is more than 60 days after the time the fingerprints were obtained under paragraphs A, C, or B. Where are we on that question? Do they mean to say that within 60 days of the adjudication, it must be destroyed? This isn't what it says, but... If you want to put a time limit following adjudication within which to accomplish the destruction, that I could understand.
It seems to me that whether that was intended or not, that what they have required is that the child must be adjudicated within a 60-day period.
Yeah.
That's
what I think they want. And that's not realistic.
And that's why we want to change, you know, because without regard to the fingerprinting thing, which becomes, I think, a small matter by comparison, it in effect requires all children arrested on felony charges to be adjudicated formally in the juvenile court. And if you get to that point, you might as well close the door, because really, at that point, that thing which is most peculiar and unique to the juvenile system goes.
Okay, well, I think we can get it straightened out.
I have one other question. When you say adjudicated and found not to be within the jurisdiction of the juvenile court, are you talking about remanding? Wouldn't that include remanding? If the child was taken in and remanded, they would not be within the jurisdiction of the juvenile court, would they?
Not within the present terminology. I hate to...
Same thing we were.
Sorry,
you guys have been in the business and I've been in the
business. Maybe 3 or 4
juvenile cases a
year, I admit that.
But
you don't have any great expertise, but I didn't realize it was that.
You're about to get...
I didn't realize it was that discreet.
We're not around here, Bill, to make laws understandable by lay people.
Let's go to the amendments and see if we have the ability as a jury to deal with those and the vote to deal with the bill tonight if possible. Line 4, the chair would move that the words taken into temporary custody be deleted. Is there any objection? The chair would move that on line 11, the word that the word up be substituted for the word that. Any objection? Okay. Chair would move that after subsection B, following line 13, we would insert a new subsection E by order of the juvenile court. Any objection? Okay, chair would move that in subsection 4, we in effect delete subsection 4 as it is now framed and substitute for it the provisions of, well, we don't know what those are yet, but we're not talking about section 103. Do you have Senate Bill 2?
Not right now.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I'm not prepared to vote for that amendment without seeing what
I will understand. Let's see if we can go on beyond that, and then we'll have Dennis supply that to us. Third move, in subsection 6, the proposed amendment from Betsy Welch in line 28, you may, after who is, delete not, and insert adjudicated and after found, insert not. Any objection?
Sure.
Mr. Gardner?
I've moved that in line 30 that we amend the 60-day provision to run from the date of adjudication rather than from the date that the photographs or fingerprints were taken.
Further discussion?
Well, the practical effect of that is, of course, that if the child is arrested and fingerprinted, or not even arrested, if he's fingerprinted and not brought to trial, that they keep those records.
For 2 years, then he can expunge it.
I see. Okay.
Further discussion? Any objection?
Considering that the word date from the date of adjudication.
I think what we would do is simply delete everything from within down through the word section in line 32. It excluded the subsection B. According to laws concerning adults, if the child had been transferred to criminal court for prosecution. I gather in that case, the intention is the prince will be treated like those of an adult.
I thought I heard Mark say that he wanted to, give him 60 days from the date of final adjudication. Isn't that what you said?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I understand, too, because if you're talking about a child who's adjudicated and not be within the jurisdiction, that's not going to include children who've been transferred anyway. They're not under that section to begin with. Okay. So, I don't think we even need to make reference to specific paragraphs under subsection 1. By hypothesis, a child who's been transferred is not going to be adjudicated and found not within the jurisdiction of juvenile court anymore. So, I think we delete anything between within and section and say, shall be destroyed by the officer, charged, blah, 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 within 60 days from the date of adjudication. I think we voted on it. Now we're going back and making clear exactly what we voted on. Is there any further discussion?
Don't need unless a continuance. You don't need any of that.
Yeah, that's correct. We delete that. You know.
You can expect a conference.
Any of you who've testified see any problem with that particular number?
I think that
suggested it too. Why have the 60-day period at all? Why not simply have it read that if a child is adjudicated and not and found to be not guilty, the print records or photographs should be destroyed, period?
Well, I'm wondering if the time limit doesn't make it a little less open-ended as far as when that duty should be carried out.
Yeah, it also kind of creates the impression, well, what do they need 60 days for?
Well, I guess that's a good question.
Mr. Chairman,
I guess there's nothing that says it has to be that long.
Mr. Chairman, well, I guess the ironic thing is that if you're tried and found not to be within jurisdiction of court, your records are expunged in 60 days, but if you're never tried, it's 2 years.
Yeah. I don't think
that's reasonable. Keep going down that line, you're going to have to bust the rest of it.
I really wish to delete the time limitation.
Mm-hmm. No, it seems to me that goes the other way.
I want to make it 30 days. I'm going to do it faster.
Well, I mean, some of these folks don't have the judge that has to keep things clicking, all right?
Well, there's no motion, let's have 60 days for time. We both got it on that conference in the works. Although I think all the changes we made are very sensible changes. Is there further discussion? I guess we've gone about as far as we can until we get to the line of business in section 103 of Senate Bill 2. Okay, we'll pick that up. This is on the agenda tomorrow. We could be ready tomorrow to take final action. Perhaps you could have the amendments we've made to be able to burn this old amendment to do this.
You say we will be back on this one?
I'd like to bring it to a vote and get it out tomorrow if there are votes to get it out. Okay, Senate Bill 78. Thank you, Ed Penning. Appreciate it. Mr. 211? Back to 211, I should say.
I'm George 211, Assistant Administrator of Programs for the Mentally and Emotionally Disturbed Mental Health Division. And I would like to testify on behalf of Ann Gold's Senate Bill 78. The purpose of this bill is to simplify the transfer of inmates from state correctional institutions and from the juvenile training schools to the mental hospitals, and at the same time protect the civil rights of the inmates or students transferred. It also clarifies the responsibility of the superintendent of the respective institutions involved in the transfer. Now, the problem came about partially through the way Senate Bill 674 was written in 1975. The problem is that the way the law was written, the procedures used for the civil commitment of the mentally ill and the mentally retarded are intertwined and mixed up, and there are different procedures and there are different problems, and they need a different approach. This bill would clarify that. Specifically, it will make the language of the statutes consistent with that and other statutes related to the mentally ill or mentally retarded. It will allow for the participation of the inmate or student or his guardian in a decision to transfer or retain an inmate or student in a state mental hospital. Thus, the student, his parent, or his guardian may request an evaluation when he believes that the juvenile is mentally ill and in need of transfer. The juvenile could be retained in the state hospital until he is 21 years of age. However, we understand that maybe this is going to be changed by Senate Bill 2 and believe whatever age limit is adopted there should conform with this. It provides that the inmate or students who have demonstrated satisfactory progress while in the hospital may be released directly to the community. Now they have to be transferred back with some of the inmates that are transferred over to the, say, the substance abuse program in Ward 9, it's more appropriate that they be released directly with the consent of the correctional institution and the consent of the parole board. And similarly, with a juvenile who is transferred over, it often is more appropriate to place him directly out of the institution rather than transfer him back at the duration of his treatment. It makes the provision for the civil commitments to the mental health division of inmates or students who do not want to stay, although it provides for an emergency 15-day transfer. The present law is 14. That's just to make it in confirmation with the other involuntary emergency admission. It would require the same criteria for civil commitment and would allow the same rights to the mentally ill person as for the adult. Another provision in here is to allow for the sentence to run concurrently. That is, if an individual is transferred over, say, from a correctional institution to the hospital and they spend 6 months or a year in treatment there, the time spent in treatment would count for their sentence. It also provides that if the guardian or relatives or the institutional staff believe that somebody is mentally retarded and would be better served in a hospital and training center for the mentally retarded when probable cause is shown, the mental health division or its designee would provide a diagnostic assessment the same as for other persons from the outside, so that they would go through the same procedure to get into a state hospital and training center. Then if there's probable cause, the individual, if they're retarded, would undergo the same commitment as is being proposed in Senate Bill 79, which you're considering tonight. Now, we think that this would be a rather rare event because most retardants are screened out before they're sent to a correctional institution, but it does occur occasionally. So we think that this would improve the efficient working relationships of the institutions and at the same time protect the civil rights of the people involved.
I understand that the 179476, which is repeal, is the current section that details procedures for involuntary transfer of inmates to mental health institutions.
I should add this, Mr. Chairman, that in regard to Senate Bill 1020 on the other side, in the other house, we've had some long discussions about whether a civil commitment for mental illness should be done by the juvenile court or the court that has jurisdiction for adult commitments. And it's some people feel one way and some people feel the other way, and that hasn't been resolved. I think our preference in the mental health division is to have it done through the same court that commits adults, because the procedure is quite cumbersome and quite technical, and we think the court that does it all the time is probably the most appropriate to make that decision. But we're quite happy to go with whichever way the people over there decide that it should be.
What I was going to ask you was that, well, as I understand them all, most of the provisions of 179 and 476 are, you know, put into this bill. One subsection that is not is a subsection that requires establishing rules within each facility for transfer procedures. Familiar with that?
Yes, I'm familiar with that, and I know that we do have rules governing that.
Well, I think this bill is silent on that question.
Well, honestly, I don't know whether that part of the present statute is deleted or not. In any case, I would think that under the rulemaking authority of the Mental Health Division and the Correction Division, we would still be required to have rules to govern this. It wouldn't change our... In other words, we make rules on many, many laws that we deal with, even though there isn't a provision in the law that says we must do that.
Further questions? Okay, thank you very much. Dennis?
Who drafted the bill? Was it a legislative council bill?
I can't tell you that. Dr. Cole looked after this before I took over, and who drafted the bill was not imparted to me.
Was it the subject of extensive scrutiny in the Senate Human Resources? I take it was, because amendments all.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Kind of getting a feeling of confidence about it.
yes, we testified there, and they examined it fairly thoroughly. But you must realize that some of the provisions in there are different than what they're still trying to resolve about Senate Bill 1020.
I have a note here from the Senate Judiciary that asked us to hold off on this bill until 1020 and 1028 both came over. In your opinion, is it necessary to hold off until those two bills come over?
Yeah, I think that you'll have to get together on the two, because somebody's going to have to decide whether the juvenile court is going to commit juveniles or whether it should go through the probate court or the adult court.
Further questions? What are those numbers in your Senate bill?
1020 and 1028, and Senate Bill 79 and 78 are what, also all related to each other?
No, 79 has to do with the mentally retarded. The only thing in here about the retarded is to transfer retarded from institutions to mental health facilities.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jeannie Savage. Did you get any indication when the Senate would be acting on those?
Well, the note is a month and a half old.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm Jeannie Savage, and I supervise the medical care in Multnomah County Corrections Institution. And we read this for you, I know, but our concern is that possibly in this bill we could insert the right of transfer not only between state institutions but from county correctional facilities when there's a question of mental illness and when it's on an emergency basis. Currently, when there's someone who is mentally ill in jail, there's a great deal of red tape, a great deal of difficulty in getting them plugged into the mental health system. Sometimes it has to do with their legal charges, sometimes it has to do with where they are, and many problems in there. We have proposed this might be a way to get at that problem.
Do you have amendments prepared that would...
Not specific amendments. We had not been aware that this bill came out of the Senate committee, I guess because it had been there and discussed a great deal of time, and all of a sudden it was out over here. So we were in error in not being involved. The insertion would be to add county correctional facilities to state correctional
institutions. Okay. Questions? Thank you very much.
Would you, you say you haven't prepared any amendments, could you, sometime soon submit at least an indication of where you think in your opinion it should be in this bill? Or have you already done that?
It's going to have to be numerous changes because the references throughout on the various agencies, whether institutions, it's probably going to take 50 different movies.
He's just trying to get out of some work.
Right. Is George Joseph around these days? Up at one time. George.
Tell George if he wants it.
Before we get Gillette, we can subpoena George.
Tell us, Joe, we would appreciate it if his office could possibly send you a little. We will be holding the bill, I think, for a few days until we see what happens on 10/20.
Would this permit a transfer from the county commission? I wonder how broad this might be. Limited to counties of over 500,000, Mr. Chairman, I think you'll pick up from the floor.
All right. Put it right along. Senate Bill 79, Crumble.
I just looked again at some of the numbers.
Pardon?
I just looked again at some of my numbers.
You know, those were just decided. Yeah, perhaps we should take care of those in the committee. Settle some jokes with that.
I'm Don Crumble. I'm the chief of day training programs with the Program for Mental Retardation and Developmental Disabilities with the Mental Health Division. And I'd like to make some comments on Senate Bill 79. This bill consolidates and updates the statutes relating to mentally retarded persons. The bill also contains new provisions for the protection of certain mentally retarded persons. The bill assures, through exploration of possible alternative services prior to voluntary admission to state training centers for the retarded, and assures due process for those few persons who are involuntarily committed. In Article 1, the bill defines mental retardation consistent with the terminology of the American Association of Mental Deficiency. It standardizes some terminology and humanizes other terminology of the law that's currently in place. Persons in training centers are referred to as residents rather than wards, and the article recognizes that persons are admitted to service rather than committed, and establishes the training role of the facilities for the mentally retarded. This strengthens the emphasis of the treatment and training for handicapped citizens as opposed to dependency-oriented care. The article further emphasizes the concept by dropping hospital from the name of the training centers and suggests that the three training centers would be noted or would be named training centers rather than hospital and training centers. In Article 2, the primary role of the training centers as facilities providing training necessary to the growth and development of residents is strengthened. In addition, Article 2 emphasizes that the primary entry point into Oregon's mental health services network is community-based, and the training centers are just one part of the total community, the total services available. There is assurance that admission to the training center is the most suitable service plan for each person as required. That is a the variety of services that are available to the retarded are reviewed prior to a person being committed to a training center. This article further focuses on local responsibility. This is not a new concept, but many community mental health programs are not yet sufficiently staffed to meet these requirements fully. The Mental Health Division anticipates continuing to perform these functions for those communities until the community is sufficiently experienced and capable of assuming these responsibilities. The requirements of this article can be met by the communities keeping simple records and getting assistance from the division. Article 2 further establishes the Training Center Admission Appeal Board to review all cases where admission is denied, contrary to the wishes of the applicant. The article also establishes an admission policy based on a fair first-come, first-served principle. there is some flexibility in this principle to allow for special circumstances. Article 3 specifies the responsibility of the Division of Diagnosis and Evaluation Service and assures that communities not prepared to offer the service may call upon the Division's resources. This article also delineates the basic components of a satisfactory diagnosis and evaluation. Article 4 restricts involuntary commitment to those mentally retarded persons who are dangerous to themselves or others who are unable to care for their basic personal needs and are not having those needs met. Such conditions must be established by the court beyond a reasonable doubt with appropriate due process for the persons involved. The duration of such commitment is limited to 1 year, but a procedure for continued commitment is established. The proposed commitment procedures are comparable to procedural rights afforded the mentally ill in Oregon in involuntary commitment proceedings. The number of mentally retarded involuntarily committed persons is small. During the past 4 years, this averaged about 5.5 a year. In all cases, the courts and communities would have the Division's Diagnosis and Evaluation Services at their disposal. In summary, Senate Bill 79 consolidates and updates existing statutes, standardizes and humanizes terminology, places the entry point to services at the community level, and assures mentally retarded persons of due process in cases of involuntary commitment. The Mental Health Division urges favorable action on Senate Bill 79.
Representative Limonelli.
How much of the bill is necessary? How much of the bill, in your opinion, is necessary?
Is the question how much of the bill is necessary?
Yes, absolutely necessary. We feel that this defines a lot more fully what the institutions have in fact become. They are now part of a total service. And as such, we think there's a mental set in approaching what an institution is versus a part of the total system. Then in the involuntary commitment, it lays that out rather fully. It emphasizes that the community mental health program is part of the system, is the entry part of the system into the training centers.
My
feel it's fairly important.
My question is, rather than what just sort of codifies what actually is being done now and changing terminology, I'm curious how much of it is necessary, actually would affect a change in policy or procedures.
I think the involuntary commitment language is important to clarify that. Setting up of the appeal board, I think, is important. That's new. At this time, we do not have an appeals board. We do have people asking, for one reason or another, asking for to have their people, their relatives committed, and the diagnosis and evaluation section identifying other services that are available in the community that may be more appropriate.
How are appeals handled now? What recourse do people have?
The appeals,
in the circumstances which would trigger the appeals board mechanism under your bill?
We do have a disposition board. I believe the appeals would come directly to the administrator now.
Are there problems with that? The great volume of them?
There's not been a great volume, no.
Is
is there a problem using that procedure that you currently have?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mr. Chairman, I just make a comment. Particularly later in the session, I've been struck in my limited experience in the legislature how many bills we see like this that I really don't know how necessary they are in terms of coming down and just where there are agencies are already doing it. There aren't any particular problems. The current ends use different terminology and they want to conform it to how, in a way, it makes them feel more comfortable.
But I don't know why we're passing the bill. And I read the memo and listened to your presentation, and I'm hard pressed to understand exactly why we're spending this time this evening, what the problem is we're addressing, and why we're going to freeze umpty-umpty thousand words in the statute. And it may not be fair to address to you because we see bills like this all the time, but I'm just, my patience is running a little short at this point. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'm asking why we're doing it, why we subject ourselves to this.
Well, I think it has something to do with having been elected to the legislature.
No, Mr. Chairman. I listened to what thumbed through the bill, listened to the presentation, and looked at,
I understand
at the material and the nature and sense there.
I'm only answering facetiously, of course. I realize you're asking a serious question, right? I think what you're saying, to put it another way, is just that I think we have a very clear picture of what the problems are that legislation, this bill is required to address.
I think it gives authority to a process that is already essentially in place and gives direction to that process, gives legislative intent to the process of that we're trying to put in place.
Then maybe what we ought to be doing is looking at what you're doing and seeing if it's justified, rather than have to come in and bless it.
Well, I think that if we bless it, wrapped up in the process of doing that, ought to be a question of whether what we're sanctifying is okay.
Mr. Chairman, can we move this bill to revenue?
I would be happy, Mr. Chairman, to take care of this in revenue.
Well, here. I have a motion with you.
Well, you may make any motion you want.
I would
surely be voting against it at this point.
Oh, fine.
I didn't say indefinitely that in my position was right now.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We will ask you to come back to the work session on this bill for purposes of dealing with specific questions that will be raised as we go through the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
so we'll notify you through our cabinet.
If we are going to do that, I would like to know, I would like to request specifically, maybe no one else is interested, I'd like to know specifically why we need the bill, what the problems are. It could be in memorandum form. I'd be happy to read it. We don't have to board, take up more paper time and so forth. But I'd really like to have
it. Get prepared with that.
Thank you.
Why don't you send that in as soon as you could in advance of our work session on the bill. Give in next 3 or 4 days, we appreciate it. We'll have to be acting on all our sort of bills fairly promptly. Is there anyone else here on 79? Okay. We will be adjourned then until 1:30 tomorrow.